from Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. If you're still around, you look in your mirror and you see yourself staring back, there must be a reason you're still here on this earth. And let's find out what it is, because God put us all here for a purpose. And speaking of which, this is the year of St. Joseph, as declared by our Holy Father, and runs through the 8th of December of this year, the year of St. Joseph, and a wonderful event coming up at St. Mel's. Here to tell us all about it is Mike Allison. Mike, good day to you.
Hey, Bob. Good day to you, too.
Good to hear your voice. Sorry it's not in person, because we have donuts and maple bars and everything in the studio here.
And if I were there, you wouldn't have them anymore.
That's right. We'd probably get in a fight.
That's not the only thing I'll go just to cuss for is the maple donuts. So, that'd be a problem.
I'm telling you, that's my favorite ever since I was a kid.
Yeah, it's great. It's good. Donuts are... nothing wrong with a donut, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It is good to hear your voice. I do miss seeing you. It's always nice to come in and see you once or twice a year. But
yes.
This works great. Isn't technology great? You know?
Yeah, well, it is. You know, and we feel really, really fortunate and blessed here at the Bishop's Hour that we were able to keep broadcasting during COVID. We were worried about that like anybody else. And all our wonderful Catholic priests doing mass with camera on them, and back when things were really grim, we may be, who knows, we may be heading back in that direction, they bravely got in front of. I cannot imagine. I remember that I think it was around Easter Sunday, and we were watching our pastor from Saint James, Father Ray. And Percival, and there he was, and I'm thinking, he's giving a homily to an empty church, and he's not getting any feedback at all. He's not seeing people smiling, laughing at his jokes, or going and nodding, Father, that's a good point, or getting up and walking out, or falling asleep, or telling the kids to be quiet, or nothing, absolutely no feedback.
Come full circle, nobody get a donut with after.
Yeah, nobody getting a donut after Mass. Yeah, I had to MC, not had to, I was fortunate to MC the annual dinner for the poor for the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Mm-hmm. And it's usually 600 or 700 people at some big hall in Sacramento, and it was virtual. I'm sitting there at my desk at home, which I had to clean, so you could see my face. And, I told a joke and nobody laughed. What did that tell me? I'm not telling another joke for sure.
I bet you laughed.
This is a dead audience out there.
Yeah, it is strange. I told my wife, like a lot of people, watching Mass from our living room, And I said to Ellen, I can't believe, did you ever think we'd see the day when we'd be kneeling in front of the television?
No.
And not because of the television, because we're participating, still in the Mass. And well, strange.
I remember years ago, a sad occasion when Pope John Paul II died, and I got a call from Channel 3, and they said, "Well, you do a Catholic radio show," and I said, "Yeah," and they said, "Well, we'd like to. Are you going to watch the funeral on television?" And I said, knowing the funeral was at 2 a.m., I figured that's why God gave us, I don't know what we had in those days. It was probably actually tape, DVR, or whatever it was.
I
said, I, of course, had to say, yes, I'm planning to, you're planning to watch it live, are you? Yeah, because it was like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
They said, "Well, we'd like to come out and film you, and do a little piece on the local person in the funeral for John Paul II, and I hung up, and I got this weird feeling, and I'm going, what are they, am I going to be in my pajamas? What? I mean, we have one TV in the living room, you know, and at the time, we had. I'm not remembering the specific year, but we probably had a 6-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old in the
young
house.
Young kid.
Who frequently get up in the middle of the night.
Right.
And then my wife and I, relatively small house. And and I thought, this is, and that what I'm going to, am I going to be sitting on the couch?
And then bringing a news crew.
And then bringing in a news crew. And it's you know, it's a mass. And am I supposed to be? Am I going to be on my knees because there's a TV crew here? Or you know, it was the most awkward. I think it was maybe the most awkward moment of my life.
Wow!
But I soldiered through, Mike. I did it.
But you know what? What's kind of neat about that is they asked you.
That's exactly what I said to my wife. I said, "How could I possibly say no?" To some sort of opportunity to let people out there in Channel 3's audience, which is vast. I mean, they're the news leader. See how a local Catholic responds to the funeral mass for, you know, the Pope. It's a great opportunity. Maybe you touched one person, maybe touched five, maybe touched 10.
Did they talk to you during Mass? Did they ask
a little bit, yeah. It was a little bit like covering a golf tournament. you know, you're kind of whispering.
Yeah. You know. My buddy told me golf isn't a sport. He said any sport where you could hold all the fans back with a piece of string, he said that's not a sport.
That's pretty good. I've thought that about. I'm not a golfer, but I enjoy watching the Masters and a few things like that. But I don't deny that it's very difficult. But nobody is going to run and beat you to that ball. It just sits there until I get that all the time. People say because I've done a lot of sports writing in my career, and people say, well, are you gonna cover the golf tournament wherever? And I said, no, I only do sports.
Well, you can use that line that I heard from somebody. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. That's a good one. I'll be sure I tell it to a group, though, not to a virtual audience.
Right, exactly.
Although, the thing people don't realize is in radio, we've been talking to a virtual audience here at the Bishop's Hour for 22 years.
Yeah. I don't know how people do it that don't have guests. You know, I mean, you do such a great job. You always put, I know you put me at ease and you put all your guests at ease, and I feel like I'm talking to my friend because I am. but somebody that does an hour show and they don't have anybody on and they just talk, I did not know how they do that.
it's really hard. I did that at KFBK for 3 years, nine to midnight every night.
Oh my goodness!
It was, you know, we did have the phone lines.
Yeah.
But at that hour, you know, you're up against the Kings game. You're up against the Academy Awards. You're up against the World Series, and I get people calling. It wasn't a sports show; just general talk. And I'd get people to call, and they'd say, what did you think about that foul in the third quarter? And I'd go, gee, I was on the radio during the third quarter. I wasn't at the game.
Yeah. You know? That's somebody rubbing it in. You know?
Yeah, they'd be driving home, and they just assumed I already knew what happened at the Kings game.
Right. That's so funny.
I always would tell my kids, if I give the time and the temperature more than 3 times in an hour, you know, I'm in trouble. Call. Call and be Mary from Vacaville.
You know? Right. I bet you were overjoyed when you saw the phone line light up.
Oh, yeah.
somebody to talk to.
I was especially overjoyed when midnight came.
Oh, that's too funny. That's funny. Oh, goodness.
But I know that.
Well,
I know
great
that
to
experience.
Talk with you again. We learned a lot of lessons in during this COVID. We still do, I guess, but... you know, we did learn how to do things differently and how to, you know, we talked about that at our parish, you know, what's the low-hanging fruit? Part of it was the whole digital, you know, the being able to reach people in other ways.
Right.
And it just needs to hopefully be another way. Not, you don't want it to convert to that. You know, you want it to be just another tool in your toolbox or a way to communicate. But and then we reached out, you know, making a lot of phone calls. So you're talking to people, you know, and on the phone. And I did a little of that myself and had some great conversations with people, you know, people that were just lonely. And
So
you make connections, you know, make connections with people.
Obviously, some terrible tragedies from this for many people, whether they got really sick and remained sick or died or lost a loved one. But there have been some kind of unexpected consequences, a lot of family time, a lot of really good family time. And
yeah.
And I know for us, those little guys are now four teenagers, you know, and wow. I mean, it's hi, Dad. Hi, Mom. Bye. Maybe you see them 10 hours later. Now, it was like we're eating dinner together. We're eating lunch together. We're eating breakfast together, you know.
I think it's really, especially for us, I think, as dads and being home, you know, it could have been difficult, but connecting with our children and not just being, you know, coming home when it's, leaving when it's dark and coming home when it's dark. And,
right.
I'm excited with this conference that we're doing about St. Joseph and men not being isolated and connecting again. I had a nice conversation with a gentleman that's working on my car, and by God's grace, you know, it just puts people together for a particular reason. You know, you said the outset of the show, God has a plan, and I think nothing happens accidentally. Everything is gifted by God providentially, you know, everything, the good, the bad, all of it. Perceived bad. It's all by God's plan.
Well, you know, it's. I've said it. I didn't come up with it. I read it somewhere, but except somebody will say, wasn't that a weird coincidence? And I just say, with God, there are no coincidences.
That's right.
God knew that was going to happen, and then he knew this was going to happen. And you're going, you said, the guy working on your car, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, he was talking about how connecting with his kid, you know, and I'm going on a road trip tomorrow. I'm heading out with my son. He's older, but we had a great conversation about, you know, listening to your children. And I said, you know, I wish that I would have listened more and took an interest in what, instead of me talking at them, talked with them and asked them a lot of questions, you know, about what they're interested in and learn as much from them as they did from me, you know what I mean?
No, exactly.
And what their interests are. So I think that, I guess my point, you know, I'm going on a tangent here, but during this COVID, the blessing was, like you said, spending more time and getting closer and getting to know each other, and it was good. It was a good thing.
Well, in 6-7 weeks away? October the 16th?
Well, yes, we're excited. We had to take a hiatus, you know, like everybody did. We were ready to roll last May, and we had to cancel, but we're not going to wait till May. That's typically when we have this. We decided to do this in October, which is different for us, but I think we're excited. It's going to be a little cooler, too, you know. It will be nice. So it's our eighth annual Men's Day of Faith Renewal is what we call it, and our theme is Living with Courage, Lessons for Men from St. Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to connect with the year of St. Joseph, and we have the perfect speaker for this. We have Father Matthew Spencer, who I know you're very familiar with, that hosted on Relevant Radio the St. Joseph's Workshop. And Father is now the provincial, the superior for the Oblates of St. Joseph in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
But we had been talking to Father for a couple of years, and we finally were able to work it out. And I know he's very excited, and this is what he loves talking about most, is St. Joseph and God's plan and St. Joseph's plan for men and how he helps us and guides us and is there for us. And so I'm super excited about it. And we're rolling. We're starting to promote, and we hope we get a lot of folks that come.
And this will be in person?
It'll be in person, yes. Yes, it's not going to be virtual. We're going to have it at our parish center. We'll follow all the guidelines at the time of the diocese. We're aware that, you know, things change and we have to be flexible, but we're gonna move forward with this and, you know, faith and trust and whatever and however it turns out to be is, I guess, the way it's supposed to be. But we're gonna do our part. We're working really hard, and we've got a prayer team. I we just sent out, my son-in-law takes care of this, he sent out to 8 different groups of sisters throughout California that are all praying for us for this event, which is super exciting. He's probably got the biggest part. He does that every year for us.
And that's wonderful.
It's fantastic. So we get notes back from the sisters saying they're praying for us and praying for Father Spencer. And, you know, Father will be talking about insights about St. Joseph. And there's so many, so such a great model for us as men, as a husband, a father, you know, lessons in persecution. He certainly was persecuted. St. Joseph the Worker, you know, I know through my career, I always just counted on St. Joseph to help me. I was always asking St. Joseph to help me, you know, and I retired on his feast day, in fact, this year.
Oh, really?
I did, on the feast
That's
of St.
March
Joseph.
19, right?
March 19th. I chose that specifically, and I told St. Joseph, you were there with me. You got me in this. You get me out. I'm still with you, you know.
That's when the Swallows returned to Capistrano.
Oh, is it? I didn't
San Juan
that.
Capistrano, another Catholic mission.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I didn't know what the date was.
Yeah,
that,
March the 19th.
Really? Okay, yep. I didn't know that. So, but, yeah, you know, I think as men, you know, again, talking about sort of this whole COVID thing, there's a lot of isolation, you know, and I think that's when we get in a lot of trouble. When we isolate ourselves and we start depending too much on ourselves, and it's easy to get down and it's easy to get depressed. It's easy to, you know, but this does take courage. It takes courage to take that little step and then take the next step. And God illuminates each step. You know, He doesn't have you look at the mountain because the mountain's too overwhelming. I think the devil wants you to look at the mountain because if you saw it, you'd say no. But God has you look at the step and take the next step and take the next step. And when we act in our faith, you know, all the grace is there. So I think we'll learn a lot of that from St. Joseph. And the other part that excites me about him is when he was looking for clear direction and absolute discernment from God, he slept. He took a nap.
He took a nap.
On that, you know? I'm going to try that. I'm going to say, okay. I would. So who wouldn't want to know that man, you know?
Yeah. Well, there were a few people in the Bible sleeping on Jesus.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly.
Oh,
you
man.
Know, St. Joseph dreamt and he got up. He was obedient and he did what he was supposed to do. You know?
Did the right thing.
He did the right thing.
In difficult circumstances. In very difficult circumstances.
Oh, God.
It wasn't like
imagine.
People were going to cheer for him.
No.
At least at the time.
No, of course not. Of course not. Yeah, not at the... They didn't know what he was doing. He wasn't sure what he was doing. He just knew what he was in front of him, and he knew he had a great responsibility, you know. So I hope men will look forward to getting together because I think we encourage one another. When I look at men in our parish, and there's some wonderful guys that are great examples, and it's really good to be around people like that. And, of course, we have a lot of fun, too. So we're kind of following our normal format. We start with Friday night. And that's on the 15th at 7 o'clock, and we have what we call this the Men's Day of Faith Renewal. So we call Friday Family Night of Faith Renewal.
Right, you invite the family the night before.
We invite the family the night before, and we kind of lean on Leatherby's to help us, and we have ice cream, an ice cream social. So we'll hear from Father, and then we have a lot of good ice cream and just good fun, and Father will answer questions, and we just hang out at the parish center with the family and see the kids and running around, and
that's a great parish center too. Relatively new.
It is. It's a perfect venue for this, and I know the diocese likes to use it a lot for different things. So we're very privileged to have it, and we take advantage of it. In fact, that was part of the idea of when we had that parish center built is how do we use it? You know, how can we use it? So a group of men. It worked on the Parish Center Building Committee. We kind of got together, and we had gentleman Chuck Friedrich, who took the lead on this and been wonderful helping and getting this this whole men's retreat, this men's event going. And we got a solid little team that most of the guys came from that building committee, and we're using it for this event annually. And our pastor, Father Aldrin Basardi, is a huge fan and very, very supportive of this. And we've had some great speakers. We get four or five priests that hear confession that day. We're going to do our catered lunch again. We start the morning with the rosary on Saturday. Now, this is just for the men.
A pretty good way to start the day.
It's a perfect way. So we say the rosary at 8. Mass is at 8:30, which will be concelebrated by our pastor and Father Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we it's like this vast sea of men that go from the steps of their parish across the street over to the parish center. It's one of my favorite parts, actually. I go run down to the center. I like seeing all the men coming over, you know, in this big crowd. And we get everybody checked in real quick and have a little continental breakfast. Father gives three talks during the day and does a Q&A. We space those talks out and get a little break in there. And then we're having a catered lunch, but since it's October, we're going to do an Oktoberfest this year.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to do sausages and the potato salad and, you know, all the German food that we can work up for lunch. And really good. We're going to use Hannibal's again, which has been somebody we've used for all 8 years. And
I knew you had used them in the past. That's great.
Yep. Little different twist this time. They're not doing the pulled pork. Since we're in October, like I said, we'll do the Oktoberfest, and I think it'll be fun. So then we have confession. The event ends about 3:45, and men have the opportunity to interact with each other, and it's really great. And you're home. You still got 3 hours of daylight, and get back with your family, and it's really a nice day. And we hope that we connect with men to follow up and get involved in maybe little small groups or just connect and see how guys are doing. We don't bug them. We don't send them emails all the time, but they know we're there. And, we have a mass celebrated for those guys a couple weeks after that and with all of them. And we invite them all to come back if they want for that mass, if they want to grab a coffee or something. So we're excited.
Boy, that's great. How do people sign up?
Well, you go to our website, and that's smpcevents.org, and that stands for St. Nell Parish Center events.org. So smpcevents.org, and there's also a phone number that they could call to register if they would like, 916-612-0479. And we're going to have flyers all over town, so if they see a flyer, we have a registration form on the back of our flyer, but the best way is to go online and just it's real simple, and you can register there. And, I mentioned, too, we have a great door prize that we're giving. It's a valued at $300. It's a statue of St. Joseph the Worker, and it's about a 36-inch tall. It looks like stone. It's not stone, but it's a stone-look St. Joseph statue, and it's awesome. It is so so nice. So we're excited to have that as a door prize. Some lucky man will get that.
Oh, that's great. Will it fit in their trunk?
Well, they'll get to ride in the Diamond Lane on the way home.
No, that's true. They put it in the front seat. That's right.
So there's another perk.
Can you see? Because people do that, they do that on the Golden Gate Bridge. They put a puppet or something over there or somebody, and it's a pretty nasty ticket. And can you see a cop pulling you over and you're arguing about this is a violation of my freedom of religion?
This is
real person. This is St. Joseph.
That's right. You say, really, you're going to give. Does the passenger get that you're going to give St. Joseph a ticket? Is that what you're
I almost want to try it, Mike.
Well, every year I always extend the invitation. You got a free seat in the house, Bob. And, if you want, go ahead and put two tickets in the raffle.
Yeah.
And you get to do that.
Yeah, just the thought of it. That's funny. That's great. I remember. I forget where I read it, and Bishop Soto and I, the last time he was on, we had a good laugh about it, talking about the year of St. Joseph, the burying the statue upside down because you're going to sell your house or something.
Oh, man.
I remember reading that in some real estate news or something, Bishop and I had a good laugh about it.
We're not recommending
that. But this statue would be too big to bury.
That would definitely be too big to bury.
Yeah.
That'd be like,
you'd probably sell your house instantly, though.
That's right. That's what they say. I don't know. I'm going to go old school on that.
Just go old school.
Houses are selling easy enough now, you know. So,
yeah.
How about, have you learned a lot about St. Joseph? I know I have this year.
We haven't done a lot of it, but the pilgrimage is we have 11 St. Same thing we had when we had the bishop on. We were talking about it, and he said when he was in the Diocese of Orange, you know, they had some repeat names for parishes because a lot of Catholic churches. And but you said Our Lady of Guadalupe was clearly the most prominent, and that was only two or three of those. And he said we have 11 St. Josephs in this diocese.
Wow.
That's over 10%.
Wow. That's something.
He's everywhere. He's all the way from Wairika, which I think is the northernmost parish in Wairika. Maybe Alturas. They're pretty close. And then all the way down to, I think it's Rio Vista, which is almost the southernmost.
Wow. You know, you gave me a great idea. Me and my son are going on a road trip. We're leaving tomorrow morning early, and we're going to Idaho and Wyoming.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, yeah, we're going to do some camping. And it's something we've talked about for years, and we're finally going to do it now that I'm retired. So we're going to
Mike, you should shoot me an email because I met my wife in Idaho.
Oh,
and my wife is from Wyoming, so and Montana. So I know everything about those states. Everything.
Oh, well, I'll have to ask you for sure. We're going to Twin Falls tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
And then the following on Saturday afternoon, we're going to go up to, what's it called up there? The Grand Tetons up in Wyoming.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Don't forget the name of those.
Yeah.
They are the most spectacular mountains you're going to see. Uh-huh. They are just, and it's in the Teton National Park is connected almost to Yellowstone.
Yeah.
And just if you didn't believe in God before, you will believe in God after seeing the Grand Tetons.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
We're really, really excited about it. But what I was thinking is I think we go through Wairika, so maybe I'll stop at St. Joseph's is up there.
There's a St. Joseph's right there, right down in kind of the main drag in Wairika.
Okay.
And
perfect.
It's just they're everywhere. There's one in McLeod. There's one in Marysville, a real old historic Marysville with the big spire, and then of course down on the river at Clarksburg.
That
beautiful parish, kind of sunken there under the levee, I hope you have a great trip. I think my statue is still up in the state of Idaho. I'm not positive, but
okay.
I've been there many times. I love that state.
Oh, well, we're really excited. So we can't wait. We can't wait. And I'll get to check my Wairika St. Joseph box. So that's perfect.
Very good. Very good. Then you only have 10 to do. And you've got till December the 8th.
Okay. All right. Well, I can do that. I can do that. So that'll be good.
Well, Mike, have a safe journey with your son. And we'll look forward to it. We'll get you back on, and maybe we'll get Father Matthew on. That would be great as well.
That would be great. And I encourage everybody, again, go to the website, smpcevents.org. The event, we kept the same price we have for every year, $40, which includes all those things I talked about. So, and we do not turn any man away for financial reasons. So if you really want to go but you feel like, you know, it's been a rough year and you can't afford it, please let us know, and we'll take care of you. So.
Very good.
All right.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Bob, great to talk with you. Thank you. God bless you and everything you're doing.
God bless you, too. Much appreciated.
Right.
That's Mike Allison from St. Mel's Parish in Fair Oaks on Pennsylvania Avenue. And the event is on October the 16th. On Fire, the NorCal Jam, Saturday, September 18th, 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Six Flags Discovery Kingdom in Vallejo. Sister Josephine Garrett will be among the speakers. Father Radmar Howe will be speaking. We've been lucky enough to interview both of them, and boy, they are delightful people and faith-filled people. Joe Melendres will be there as MC. Epic the Band will be there. Go to onfirenorcal.com to get your tickets. And, of course, there's a Holy Mass in the morning and all-you-can-eat buffet lunch, and then you can be on all the rides at Six Flags as well. Bishop Soto has released a story about our recent wildfires, and unfortunately, it seems like almost every day you read about a new one springing up, and we're nowhere near out of the fire season. The bishop writes, I have received the painful news that St. Anthony Mission in Greenville, California, was destroyed by the Dixie Fire. And, of course, we saw the photos that almost everything in the town of Greenville was destroyed. Our prayers go out to all of our brothers and sisters affected by these fires. Pray with me for the people of Greenville, Lake Almanor, Colfax, and all those afflicted by the ferocious wildfires devastating the region. The destruction of communities and neighborhoods is heartbreaking. May the companionship of our prayers and support bring consolation and renewed faith in the divine mercy of the Lord Jesus. Together, we ask the intercession of St. Joseph, the protector of the Holy Family, to protect all families in the region, as well as guard from any harm all the men and women who are working to contain the burning conflagrations. For those who have lost loved ones, as well as their homes and businesses in the recent wildfires throughout California, may they find consolation in trusting that God will provide for all they need. Let us pray. We pray for those who have been harmed as a result of these fires and pray that those who are missing or are still in harm's way will be found and protected. Let us pray. For our first responders, firefighters, the brave men and women battling fires and helping people to safety, may they be kept safe as they work to restore calm and assist those affected by the wildfires. Let us pray. We have asked each of our priests on a future weekday of their choosing to offer Mass on behalf of all who have been affected by the fires. If you wish to donate, you can donate by mail. You can send checks to the Diocese of Sacramento Fire Assistance Fund, and you can send them to 2110 Broadway here in Sacramento, and that's 95818. If you want to donate by phone, call the Catholic Foundation, and this money will go specifically to the Fire Assistance Fund. Call the Catholic Foundation. Their phone number is 916-733-0266. And if you wish to donate online, you go to scd.org. That is the Sacramento Catholic Diocese, scd.org/fire-assistance, and all from our great Bishop, Bishop Jaime Soto. Really sorry to hear about the church in Greenville. Not the first time that has happened to a Catholic church here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's amazing because, you know, you see the stuff on TV and you don't, it's hard to grasp things in reality because you don't see, you see it, but you don't smell it, you don't feel it. I know you and I both recently had sort of experience being close enough to the fire. I mean, it was, you had told me about your experience almost being like Thule fog where you were, and then I had the same experience.
Yeah,
and I looked at the AQI, which I think most people now look at, like the Weather Channel almost in California, and it was pretty amazing how thick it was. And in my other job, I work in a law enforcement capacity, I have the opportunity to sometimes go to these fires to help out with, because I work on the animal side of things, to help out with some of the animals. And they haven't asked me to come to this one yet, any of these ones yet, but I've been seeing a lot of videos from my comrades who have gone, and it's pretty amazing. The things that how the fire looks when you're there and what it can do and things like that, and how it almost has its own life.
They definitely create their own weather. Remember the car fire up in Redding? We came through that area the other day, and you could see where the car fire had been.
Mm-hmm.
Utter devastation. And they said that was the fire-nado, the fire tornado.
Right.
128-mile-an-hour winds created by the fire, and you can imagine how fast that spread. And the unpredictability. I mean, fires are always dangerous, but veteran firefighters, from people from Cal Fire, and then a lot of fire departments get called in. They sort of know, because you'll see guys. Okay, the fire's moving that way. We can be here. But they're saying some of these have just been highly unusual in terms of the behavior of the fire, which makes it 10 times as dangerous for the firefighters.
Yeah, I have a couple of friends who've done CAL FIRE, and I have a friend who's actually a captain in the Bay Area, and they both talk about fire as if it's like a another entity, like it's it's a person.
It's alive.
Yeah, and like it's almost like when you hear like officers talk about, you know, a person that they're on a call with. It's like they'll say, like, you know, you can be here, like you were saying, you'd be here, and it, predictably it should go this way, but you never know. And like with my friend who's a captain, he talks about in houses and stuff. He's like, yeah, you go through this door, but you never know if it's going to be waiting for you. And I'm like, it? He's like, yeah, the fire. Yeah. And it's like, wow, okay. Like, so they look at it like as if they are actually fighting a thing. It's not, you know, like it's not like this sort of, oh, it's fire.
Something that almost has intent.
Yeah. It's almost an intent.
Like you'll even hear weather people say, well, the fire's trying to do this.
They
give it a lot of human qualities.
Yeah, we do that a lot with things like tornadoes and hurricanes. We'll say this.
Hurricane,
especially when you have a hurricane.
Trying to move out to sea.
Especially when you give it a name. It's like, you know, Hurricane Beth is on its way. You're like, okay, so Beth is doing that. All right.
Yeah,
I know.
It's strange.
It is strange when you start to name things. I mean, like all the fires have names based upon where they're from. Obviously, not necessarily human names like we give to hurricanes, but still, it's almost like it almost gives it this thing that we can all sort of go, okay, we all don't like, you know, XYZ fire. Like we have a name for it now.
I'm not sure when they first started. I remember
when there's multiple fires they had to.
My dad fighting a fire up in Idaho in 1931. There's a little sign there where the fire started, and they called it the Freeman Lake Fire. That's almost 100 years ago.
Yeah.
They were naming fires.
Well, Chicago Fire was Chicago, you know, I wonder if it's more we just notice it now because there's multiple fires. It's like, you know.
I grew up in this area, and I just don't remember the number of fires or the size of the fires.
Right. Yeah, it's become a season in California. We have, you know, winter, spring, summer, fall, and fire.
Yeah, and
it's weird.
You know, the little mountain cabin in the woods surrounded by big tall pine trees, that's sort of the idyllic, you know, a great place to spend the weekend. Or three out of four
seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet now you feel like, wow, we're really vulnerable here.
Well, my mom was living up in an area that near Manton, which was getting lots of fire.
Is that Tehama County?
Yeah. Lots of fires for a while there. There was one actually that was within a mile of her house. I went up to visit her, that fall, and we drove up to where the fire was, and it was like as she was telling me how close it was, we were there.
Yeah.
So like we left her house, we went out on the main road, and she's like, yeah, it was really close. And like within a very short conversation, it was all of a sudden desolate, and it was very eerie and scary. And I you immediately feel sympathy for everyone who is affected by it because you see how, for lack of a better term, scorching it is.
Yeah.
And I know she moved down here a few years back just to basically be around the kids, but she's told me that she has this unbelievable weight off of her shoulders every summer that she didn't even know existed because every year she's like, this could be the year. And it's such a scary thing to think about that's... You know, you put up the defensible space and you try your best, but I mean, at the end of the day, like we said, the fire's got a mind of its own.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah,
it's very scary. And you just can't do anything but, you know, hope and pray for those people that are in that line.
I know we lost a mission church in Happy Camp a year or so ago. And it's been a few years now, the wonderful church in Weed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there was some damage to Catholic schools in Santa Rosa, in the Diocese of Santa Rosa, during that fire. And it's just a difficult time. Obviously, that's not, and of course, in Paradise as well.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church there, the church itself was spared, but there was tremendous loss of life. 85 people died in Paradise, and virtually the whole town destroyed.
Yeah.
And that's a town of about 30,000 people.
Yeah. It's a big town.
Many of the other places are much smaller, and you can imagine that more, not any less tragic for the people. But a big city, and then in Santa Rosa, right? It was just neighborhoods right in the city, not up in the hills, not where the trees were, just you know.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing, living somewhere like Roosevelt, Citrus Heights area, where we have a lot of green belts. It's scary because, you just never know.
And we talked to our friend Ed Langua, who's from the Catholic Sentinel, the newspaper in the Archdiocese of Portland, and after the terrible fires in the Medford area, and all the efforts that the church, and as we know, St. Vincent de Paul, Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Sacramento, just first on the and a lot of Knights of Columbus.
The St. Knights of Columbus, yeah.
Just getting up there and doing whatever needed to be done. I remember during Hurricane Katrina, which is a number of years now, maybe 15 years, something
like that. Yeah, it's a while ago.
That talking to the people, disaster people in New Orleans, and said, we don't know what we would have done without the Knights of Columbus.
Yeah.
They said just the physical people that came down to help whatever, clean up, rebuild, whatever, and then the amount of donations.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Diocese of Sacramento was one of the leading areas of the country for contributions to help the people in New Orleans.
That's the thing it's so interesting about these kind of tragedies is, if you want to help, just be willing to show up and do something. Yeah. Like, there's always that sort of that heroic moment you want to have, where you run in and you go fight the fire. But, there's a lot of people that are qualified to do so. What they need is they need hands. So it's like, it's kind of the willingness to show up to help, but also the willingness to sit back and wait to be told when you're needed. And,
when Catholic Charities set up, in Chico for the Paradise Fire, to help people navigate the red tape, all the FEMA, all the paperwork, all the that's overwhelming. You've lost your home, you've lost your job, you've lost your car.
Yeah,
and the Catholic schools saying, hey, we will educate your kids if your school burned down, whatever, or no questions asked, no tuition, just. And we had some even here in Sacramento.
Yeah, we did.
That took advantage of that.
Yeah, Lincoln took them right in. Yeah, and it was again on the animal side of what I deal with. It was the same thing. It wasn't there was people, I'm sure, with Catholic Charities and stuff that were helping, because basically people would say, I have nothing, but I have my animals, and I can't leave them in the car.
Yeah.
So what do I do? And they would basically check them in.
And so a lot of those areas, what do I do with my horses?
Right. Your horses. Yeah.
And
they would basically give them a claim check, like a jacket, and just say, when you have a spot here, but all these foster care places are open to you, all these places where normally you can't, they don't do that, because that would be considered boarding an animal, and they're fosters, but they're like, no, don't worry about it. They open their homes and people just did stuff. So it's like, it's amazing what people will do for one another. As much as you hear in the world that everyone's fighting at each other's throats, when it really comes down to it, everyone, most people are willing to help.
That's what they said after 9/11. We're moving up rapidly on the 20th anniversary of.
Yeah, we are.
They had never seen my wife's brother was in New York City at the time. He was working in New York City at the time, and said, I've never seen complete strangers so, helpful to each other.
And you think New Yorkers are never like that,
exactly.
Too, right?
And he said it was remarkable. I still remember President Bush going to Ground Zero, and then going to a mosque, and saying to quell all any hate
right.
and or violence, and just saying, this has nothing to do with that. Let's blame the people who did this.
Right.
The specific people who did this.
Right.
And it was a real calming moment, I think, for America at the time, when we weren't sure when the next shoe was going to drop.
It's amazing when you look back on things like that. At the time, everything seems so constantly volatile. Like you said, the other shoe is always going to drop. I mean, obviously, the event was volatile. And I think it's one of those things where, when you go through a personal tragedy and you look at it a couple of years later, and sometimes you even find the humor in it, or you find, you know, something in it that you're like, oh man, I can't believe I'm almost embarrassed of how I acted of that or whatever. Right. And you see it and you look back on it and you start to kind of get this like, oh wow, you know, I learned that or I did this. It's amazing how tragedies in the country we do that. Cause, you know, back then I remember watching CNN and Fox and all of them, you know, any 24 hour, well, everything was a 24 hour news outlet after 9/11, but I remember watching everything. And then when, as the local channels kind of started tapering off and they started going back to regular programming, and then you have the 24 hour networks and you're watching it because there's something in your brain going, if you turn away, you might miss the next thing.
Yeah, right.
And not like in a morbid way, but in a way where you're like, I want to be informed so I can know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then now you look back on it now and you kind of look and go, yeah, that may not have been the best mental thing for me. But then when you try to help people and you look back, and those are the things that really, right, that really resonate with you later. Like, you know, I remember my neighbor and I started talking more, or, you know, whatever, rekindle the friendship or what have you. And I think those are the things that are important. And the president doing that kind of thing, maybe back then, was sort of almost like an afterthought to a lot of people. But now you look at it and you're like, wow, that was really a good bridging of a gap. That was growing.
One of the most emotional moments in my life, probably other than the birth of my children and meeting my wife and all those things, was being at Ground Zero,
mm-hmm,
about 30 feet from Pope Benedict, mm, when he visited Ground Zero, and doing a radio broadcast from there and watching him. It was still just a pit then. They had not.
Right. I remember. Yeah, I remember.
Anything. And the Pope Mobile comes down in this deep pit where the Twin Towers had been. And you're trying to imagine it, because I'm not a New Yorker, don't know much about New York.
But it's an iconic thing. You know, I mean, yeah, you see it everywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he comes down, and they had put a pool of water, just like about the size of a kid's small swimming pool, you know, just a little pool of water with a candle lit and a kneeler right in front of it. And there were 24 people kind of in a circle or a rectangle, mm-hmm, around that. And the Pope came in and prayed, and quietly, there were no microphones or anything.
Right.
And it wasn't a formal set. I mean, it was a ceremony, but it wasn't, you know. And then he stood up, and one by one, these people, and these people had all lost someone on 9/11.
Gosh.
Some of them were first responders, and they weren't necessarily Catholic. I don't know how they were selected. Men and women, may have been a child or two, and they came around one by one to talk to the Pope, and no interpreters. He speaks some English, not you know. I mean,
yeah, he did. He spoke English.
Thick accent, German accent, but you know, he did very little talking. He listened. He'd take their hand, you know, his two hands, their one hand, mm-hmm, cup on, and he'd listen to them. Listen to them. Some of them took 30 seconds. Some of them took 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There was no age saying, okay, it's time to move.
Yeah,
on.
Of course.
Nothing, you know.
That'd be the worst job on the planet if that was your job to do that.
And it was like, it was so moving. And they had set up just a tiny bleachers like they might have for a kid's soccer game.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
They held about 30 people. And you know, massive security. And we're sitting there and we were what they call pool reporters, because they couldn't let everybody in.
Yeah.
And just luck of the draw, I got to be one of the pool reporters. And everybody else there, other than TV cameras, which are just cameras because, again, it was very quiet.
Yeah.
They were print.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only live on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking.
Right.
While the Pope's doing this. Because I'm on live radio, and
right,
you cannot have dead air.
Was it like calling a golf game?
You're
like,
well, yeah. And these other journalists are looking at me like, shh.
The
Pope is now.
You know, yeah.
It was like covering a golf tournament.
He's on the 14th tee.
Watching him, and only having ever seen him just on television.
Right.
It was overwhelming how I thought, this is a man of God. This is a good and decent man who's, because it wasn't all about him telling these people anything. He's
right.
listening to their stories.
Yeah, he wasn't telling them his agenda. He wasn't there for that.
It wasn't about him.
Now, was it an active construction zone still when you were there? And it did
nothing had happened yet. It was
okay. So they hadn't started
barricades around it.
Okay, because I remember for a time there when they actually had the pit, they did obviously do construction to make it to remove all the debris and all things like that, and it was sort of sat for a really long time, like a lot of, you know, empty lots
quite
do.
Like they discussed what to do.
Yeah, while they tried to figure out what to do. But I didn't know if it was actually an active construction zone, because I always...
No, there was no construction.
Okay. I always have this picture in my head of you being there and these guys, these construction guys and gals, kind of being like told, like, hey, take the day off or take a long lunch. The Pope's coming, basically. Yeah.
Nothing going on yet.
Okay.
I remember we had to get up at 3:30 in the morning to go through the sniffing dogs.
And
all that, and then they put us, all the journalists, on a bus, and we're going through. And the streets have been blocked off.
Yeah,
and we got police cars on all sides of us. And I thought, this must be what it feels like to be a rock star.
Right. Or a Pope. Keith Richards or the Pope. Yeah.
And we're just driving down to the. And then it was freezing. It was April, but it was freezing. The wind was blowing.
Yeah.
And we probably got to the ground zero about 5 in the morning. And then the Pope didn't come till like 9.
You know. What time did you get on air?
What
time were you on air? Like, did you start on air?
Probably about 8. So,
oh, okay.
So about an hour of, like, there was nobody to interview.
How interesting, though, you actually got a chance to walk around Ground Zero with very few people in a spot when it was just a ditch.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, not many people.
I mean, we're talking about, I don't know, a city block, basically.
Yeah.
It was maybe, I'm guessing, and I'm sure I'm going to be wrong, but seemed like it was about 30 feet deep. Maybe.
Yeah, it was the parking structure that was at the bottom. Yeah. So I think it was about 3 to 4 stories deep. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah.
And you know, in the upper area, I mean, it was so blocked off and stuff, not just for this. They didn't want
to. So nobody walked in. Yeah.
Exactly. Or even they didn't want it to be a tourist attraction.
Yeah, it was dealt with as it should have been, with great reverence by a lot of people. It was something that you kind of didn't visit if you were a tourist. I have a friend who was out there at the time, and he had said that you almost kind of look down on people when they show up taking pictures of it, like taking vacation photos of it. It's like, no, it's not this. This spot is for prayer and reverence and not really for that.
And then when I went back when Pope Francis visited, he didn't visit. He may have, I don't know that he went to Ground Zero. I think they had already built the, but he was there, and I came to New York and then Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I followed him to Philadelphia and went to an outdoor mass with like a million people.
Yeah.
And that's very moving too, to see the Pope coming down the street and the people, the reverence. And anytime he saw somebody with a baby, he'd like halt.
And yeah.
He'd get out, he'd grab that baby.
Yeah.
Bless it. And a different scene altogether. But I remember from that one, the same thing, just having seeing the how people really, I mean, they know he's not God, they know he's, you know, but he's, you know, in persona Christi, you know, and how he Pope Francis, really a man of the people, really a lot of charisma, but seeing the contrast between the two and going, two great men,
right?
You know? And then of course John Paul II, who I never met or covered at the time, because I wasn't in that line of work at the time. But my mom did go to Candlestick Park, though, when John Paul II had Mass there. Of course, Francis had Mass at Yankee Stadium.
Of course.
You know, as he grew up as a baseball fan.
Right.
Having Mass at a baseball field, hey, if I wasn't Catholic, I think I'd become Catholic.
I don't know how he stopped himself from, as he was walking out, stopping a home plate and pointing like Babe Ruth. Yeah. I mean, he's the only one who can get away with it at this point.
Yeah. And Francis is in D.C. I wasn't in D.C., but he comes out on the balcony to talk to everybody. And it's just, it's, it's a remarkable faith, and it's remarkable to see how people respond when the leaders of our faith come. And
they're world leaders, too. I mean, that's the thing. So they're not just leaders of the faith. They're also people that meet with other world leaders like our president and other people. I mean, they are men of influence beyond men of God. And it's an interesting weight to have on your shoulders, I would imagine, from their perspective of things.
Yeah, you know, it's just remarkable men. And, you know, all presidents, they make sure they visit the Pope. The Pope is a very, very influential, even if you're not Catholic. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I questioned my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain, my race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So hold me, I need you to hold me.
Well, I've questioned significance, meaning, and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my friendships.